destined to lose if you lose the first two. So, I mean, it's a do-or-die game for the Leafs.
Finally, a breakthrough, and it's Austin Matthews with the tip of a Zach Hyman pass.
Are you guaranteeing a Leafs win today?
Am I going to Mark Messier it? Man, I'll guarantee it. There you go.
He's getting back in the play as the puck's tipped down the ice off the stick of Seth Jones into the empty net, and that makes it 3-0 Toronto.
I'm not going to break the game down at all. Toronto played a really good game. We sucked.
Zygomanis goes away for a month. He comes back for 2 days and he leaves again. And I'm co-hosting with Kreskin this morning, huh? Huh? The guy who sees all things. Look at you, eh? Cock of the walk, big man on campus. Just nailed it yesterday with your prediction.
Were you not confident in the boys?
I'll tell you what. I had a pretty good feeling about the game, but when they didn't score in the first period, Ziggy, I was getting increasingly nervous because when it's 0-0, I mean, we kind of saw it in game one. The Leafs were not nearly as dominant in game one. They were absolutely dominant start to finish yesterday afternoon. There were periods of time where you forgot Freddie was on the ice, where you thought that maybe the Leafs' defensive end wasn't going to have to be flooded in the intermission. The Zamboni could have done half the ice. But when we got into the second period yesterday and that game was still scoreless and we played most of the second period in a scoreless game before Austin finally burst the donut and Jonas Korpisalo had been brilliant up to that point, you're thinking to yourself, it's only one bad goal against the other way. It's only one weird deflection off a skate or off a rear end in front of Freddie. The puck gets past him, and all of a sudden you're down 1-0, and you have to score, maybe just to get it to overtime. The nerves were starting to build because Korpisalo felt like a wall there for a while. But yes, you had to feel good about how they played.
Yeah, Korpisalo was, I mean, lights out. How about the two stops he made against Tavares in the second,
yep,
that right in front of the net, the back-to-back.
Yep.
Those were huge saves. Mentioning Tavares, he was excellent. We borderline called him out yesterday on the show. I didn't think he was terrible in game one. It was just Marner, Nylander just had one of those games where they weren't too effective. And I thought they all played a lot better, Tavares leading the way. That's kind of what we need. Somebody take the team on the back. Matthews was awesome again. That's a great example. You're watching games one and two of a guy that is just going to will it. That's kind of what I'm talking about with leadership and guys. They need to drag guys into the fight with them. When you put that kind of effort in for Matthews, the puck just seems to find its way in sooner or later. It will just happen. If you work hard enough, goals will go in sooner or later. I thought they wore Korpisalo down too. That was part of Matthews' goal, Tavares' breakaway goal. It looked like he was tired, and that's from game one, and that's from yesterday's game. You keep putting quality chances on net. They outshot them in the first. They outchanced them from the slot area. It was a continuation from game one, and that's kind of what we talked about yesterday before the. That's what we talked about yesterday before the game.
Yeah, I think it was a build on game one, right?
Yeah,
they were not nearly as dominant in game one as they were yesterday. I mean, they deserved. If anything, Ziggy, the score didn't justify just how well they did play. They could have won that game 6 or 7-0. And so that is positive. We got to get to the Jake Muzzin situation in just a second. But I do want to throw one bit of caution out there. And someone listening right now is going to roll their eyes and say, oh, here comes the media cynicism. Another might say, yeah, I get it. I'm just telling you how I feel right now. And I was getting texts from a couple of different people during the third period and then toward the end of last night's game and afterwards saying, man, that was awesome. And it was. And maybe that was the statement the Maple Leafs needed to make. All right. Okay. I'll accept that. Except I'm going to throw a handful of examples, Ziggy, your way. January the 18th. Now, granted, this was separated by the All-Star break and the five-day Cabo San Lucas trip, as mandated by the CBA. January the 18th, a 6-2 loss at home against Chicago. 9 nights later, they return from the All-Star break and the resort break, and they win 5-2 at Nashville. They bounced back. February the 18th, they get systematically dismantled in Pittsburgh by the Penguins. 2 nights later, they bounce back and systematically dismantle the Penguins at home on the back end of the home and home. 2 nights after the Pittsburgh series ends, it's the David Ayers game, and they embarrass themselves in a 6-3 loss at home against Carolina. 3 nights later in their next game, February the 25th, they win 4-3 at Tampa Bay. They bounce back. My point is, and that's 3 examples right there. There are more over the course of the regular season. This team has shown a tendency, a willingness, an ability to bounce back. We heard the John Tavares clip off the top that when we play like that, we have a ton of confidence in each other. But what has bothered me, and I think what has bothered the average Leaf fan for so much of the year, is that we watch a game like yesterday afternoon's, we see the potential, we understand you can't play that perfectly every single day, but don't go so far back the other way that the next game is a sham. And so have they built nicely over the first 2 games? Yes. But given this team's reputation, I have absolutely no ability or willingness to cast any sort of prediction on what's going to happen tomorrow night in Game 3.
It's different.
It's different now?
The team's different. Yep.
Why is it different?
And I'll tell you, after they scored the first goal, I expected them to kind of let down a little bit and relax. That was just my first reaction to them finally scoring. Hyman makes a great play to Matthews, great rush play. I can break down that goal for you after, but I'll just say this. Usually when that goal goes in, you get shut out in the first game. You lose a game you should have won. Then you come out and you absolutely dominate for over half a game, and then you finally get that goal. Usually there's a little bit of a letdown, and we've seen that. We've seen that throughout the year. Those examples you just mentioned are when it's happened. And yeah, if you're a Leafs fan and you're kind of like, okay, well, this team, whenever they're kind of battling and they get a goal or they get a lead, there's usually a little bit of a lull where they let a team back in. They didn't let Columbus back in. Actually, they kept playing better and they kept building off what they did in game 1 and the first half of that game up until the first goal. So that's a step forward this team has taken. And that's kind of what I want to see. There wasn't, okay, we got a goal, now we'll let Columbus back in the game, right? Those examples you just mentioned were, okay, it was a good game, then a bad game, or a bad game, then a good game. That's kind of what I'm talking about, where it's not going to be that same old, okay, they won, now it's a lull. This team will not lull into game 3. From what I saw in game 2, it's a step forward. Jake Muzzin going down, that's a huge factor. Am I concerned about that? I hope he's, it's not too bad. It looked like it was his neck right away from falling into, you know, the pile there. But
just to pick up on that, because that's where I wanted to pivot. And I don't know how you felt about it, Ziggy. On the first, you know, you're watching it live and then you see that first replay. And I'll just confess, too, just given the time of day, I had Jim Houston and Craig Simpson pumping. You know, I was listening to them but I was also fixing dinner at the same time. So I was kind of doing two things at once. So my eyes at that particular moment weren't exactly glued to the TV. The first glance that I got of it, I struggled to see where the injury occurred. And I even asked on our group text, I said, did it happen with the Dubois cross check, or did it happen because he kind of, after the cross check, wasn't a stride, but he glided along the boards and then sort of, I don't know if it was, he collapsed or fell onto the back of Oliver Bjorkstrand's leg. And was there a whiplash effect? Like, what did you take away from that? I just had a hard time identifying exactly where the injury happened initially.
From watching it, it could have happened from the initial, from Dubois, the cross check. But I think it's when he fell into the Columbus player, who was
Bjorkstrand. Yeah.
I think it was there. I've had situations where, I mean, I've gone into the boards 100 miles an hour head first, and kind of nothing comes out of it. And I've been also nudged into players. And when you kind of fall into them, I don't know what it does to your neck or when you fall going head first into someone, but it's tough to actually, I don't know. I've had a couple different injuries from falling into players like that. That's why the first thing when I saw him like that, and then he kind of got up, trainers came out. That was the first thing that I thought happened was my initial reaction was neck. And that's what it looked like when they were taking him off in the stretcher and strapping him in. So it didn't look pretty. I can't see him returning. It's a 4-day you're isolated in quarantine for 4 days if you go to the hospital. I think that's what the protocol is. But, I mean, outside of the 4 days, I just can't see him coming back in this play-in series.
Yeah, I mean, we just don't know, and we'll await further word. I think there is some discretion for medical personnel here. This is going to be the first test of this, to my knowledge, Zig. And the rule is, having read up on it, you've got to provide 4 consecutive negative PCR tests over 4 consecutive days. So that's where you come up with that 4-day rule. So if Jake happens to be, and you know, medical discretion doesn't play into this, if Jake happens to be available, I suppose he could play in game 5 on Sunday, right? Because you'd register a negative test, hopefully, Wednesday today, Thursday tomorrow, Friday, then Saturday. That would be 4 consecutive. You'd be available on Sunday for game 5 if this series goes that far. But this is a huge loss. And Muzzin didn't have the greatest game in game 1, but he's kind of their jackhammer back there. He's their defensively responsible, defensively conscious guy, plays a bit of a tough game as well. He's tough to play in front of his own net for offensive wingers and centermen. If he's down, you know, Vic Palladian and I were talking before the show, it's next man up, and next man up is Marty Marincin, right? There's no way they're going to throw Rasmus Sandin into this mix.
It's probably Marincin.
Just a veteran.
Yeah. Sandin would be tough to throw in again, midway through the series. Marincin's the more reliable choice. The guy can PK. He's shown he can, be a shutdown guy. There's been questions about, just his consistency, but I really think he's more than capable of doing the job. I would like to give Sandin a try and give him a shot. I'd like to see what he could do to generate more offense. And I'm not saying the Leafs aren't generating offense, but they're going to need their defense at some point to kind of join rushes, get something going offensively in the offensive zone. They're going to need just some creativity from the back end. And every time I'm watching, I'm watching game 1, watching game 2, it's, you're looking for that, right? I think you see that from the Columbus back end. You see that from Seth Jones, Werenski. You see them always jumping in the play and kind of helping Columbus create stuff because their forward group doesn't do it on the same level that most other teams do it, and they rely on that back end. I'd like to kind of see a Sandin in the Leafs lineup. I think it would give them a huge jolt offensively, but there's the other side of it where, hey, this is a tight checking game. The way Columbus plays is hard-nosed. Can he handle the physical side of it? Because those forwards don't let up any kind of hesitation going back towards your own end, and Columbus just seems to generate turnovers. So throwing a Sandin in there would be a little bit more of a gamble, but man, I'd love to see what kind of offensive jolt he could give the Leafs.
Well, maybe we'll throw up a Wednesday troll poll question in the next commercial break. Who do you want to see replace Jake Muzzin in Game 3 tomorrow against Columbus?
I like it.
Marty Marincin, Rasmus Sandin. So I'll do that in about 10 minutes' time when we hit a commercial break. Ziggy going with Sandin. Ideally, I'd go with Sandin, but I'm gonna side with the vet. I'm going to side with the vet and say Marty Marincin. I mean, who doesn't need a little bit of nervous wreckness in their life at this time of year?
He's going to be fresh, though.
He's
going to
be fresh.
No, well, in all seriousness, when you're watching Game 2, you start to see. No, I know they've had the layoff. I know they didn't play back-to-back games, but do you not see? I see some guys not wearing down, but it's one of those things where if you don't play in a long time, and then you play a really hard game, well, you run out of steam pretty quick.
Zig, I'll tell you this to pick up on that point: tomorrow's a huge game, and not just because the winner takes a 2-1 lead; it's because the loser has to win Game 4 in that situation. Back-to-back, third and four, fourth and six.
Mm-hmm.
Like, tomorrow is a huge, huge-ass game.
Yeah, and if you, when you go up 2-1, your odds of winning are what now, 75%? So before, if Columbus would have won the first two, they would have had a 98% chance of winning the series. Now, if either of them win Game 3, it goes to 75. So that's a pretty big game. It's, yeah, 70. I mean, 70. You have a seven teams that win Game 3. When you split the first two, 75%. So it's still pretty big. It's another big one, and I don't see the Leafs laying off. They showed me a lot last night. They didn't stop playing the way they played Game 1 and they should have won, and what made them successful to get that lead in Game 2. And that's just another step they've taken. I think Matthews has really taken that next, I don't know, he's looking more mature out there. He looks like he wants it. And I'm not saying that Nylander doesn't want it or Marner. I think Marner's still battling a little bit. I don't know what it is. Is he looking for that extra play or extra shot? It's one of those things where I just think he has to get his confidence going. I like the fact that they generated more power plays. I think that was huge for them, getting guys more touches. But Marner just needs a couple. He needs a couple assists. He needs a couple points to get going. Everyone's coming down on him hard last night after the game, saying he's been non-existent out there. I know these guys, they have to get the juices flowing. They need a couple points to get going, make a couple big plays. It's just they're not there. The plays are not there, and these aren't going to be big scoring games. So he's going to have to dig deep and kind of find that one or two big plays or big points to get his confidence going, because he's not going to do it by, you know, just getting those two phantom assists in the first period. You know what I mean? How guys come out and you kind of get a couple easy ones in the first, or you get a power play early, you get a second assist. Those aren't coming. He's going to have to work for everything he's going to get in this series.
Well, Ziggy, I mean, Mitch may be struggling right now, but there are those in the bubble trying to help him out, even by using disguises.
From the Maple Leafs, we have Mitch Marner.
Mitch Marner.
Who was that? Who is that?
I have absolutely no idea. That's got to be a media relations person in the bubble. So up at the podium after the game yesterday, who was it?
Mitch Marner.
Mitch Marner.
Are you sure that wasn't a glitch, though? I listened to it four or five times.
No, it wasn't a glitch. Did you see Mitch's face?
There was a glitch yesterday on the show. So I'm just saying.
There was a glitch yesterday on the show. I have no recollection. What could it possibly be that you were talking about?
There's a glitch on the show yesterday. I'm just making sure the audio is all good.
Okay. All right. All right. So you're not using your squeaky chair today? Is that the... Is that what's going on here?
I'm just saying, there was a glitch yesterday, and I don't know if that was a glitch. I mean, who is that? That's someone. That's not the Leafs PR.
Well, good God! It better not be. It can't possibly be.
You think for sure he said Marnie? Like if I said Scott McCarthy?
Yes. Well, if you go to Sportsnet 590, the fans' Instagram page, the camera on Mitch. When Mitch Marnie is announced, he sits there and he turns to whoever was beside him, his teammate beside him up at the podium, and he mouths, Marnie? He's just laughing. Oh, yeah. He heard it.
Yeah, that's not great. I mean, whoever that is.
Mitch Marnie.
They're definitely getting, if that's somebody from the NHL, they're definitely getting, they definitely got an email today, probably a call,
yeah.
Saying, hey, learn all the players' names. Especially learn.
What was that?
Yes. See, maybe it was one of those situations where you don't get the real audio.
Well,
and they throw something else in there.
It's all doctored.
Yeah, maybe it is all doctored. But yeah, Mitch Marnie, I mean, come on.
Well, I think just to circle back, the themes that are emerging here as this quick ramp up and right into the play-in series now have taken us through a couple of important games for each team. Like, the McDavids of the world stepped up when they had to. The Crosbys of the world stepped up when they had to for Pittsburgh in game two. Matthews took a very good game one and gave the Leafs a very good game two. John Tavares heard the criticism after game one, stepped up yesterday. I know that he only had an assist in the game, but Elias Pettersson was brilliant for the Vancouver Canucks last night. And I know that the Canucks turned a 4-1 lead late into a 4-3 victory, but a win is a win is a win. They tied the series. Pettersson was absolutely brilliant in that game. What we're seeing here in the early going, Zig, is the superstars on teams helping to dictate through their play one way or the other the results of their team's games.
Yeah, and you're just going to see more of it. It's going to take some time for guys to kind of find their game, find their hands. Get a timing's going to be huge, especially for the big guys. And I think you can throw Marner in that group as well. Sometimes it just takes a couple games. Guys usually rely on getting on the scoreboard. You might not have that kind of time in a five-game series, and the stakes are so high, and teams are, what we've seen already, even the lower-seeded teams, they've been dialed in. The Canadians... you know what I mean? Teams where they're getting good goaltending, teams are finding their defensive games to start. I think that's been a focus on a lot of systems where, hey, we might not have our hands, might not have our guys, you know, feeling it from the scoring standpoint, but let's play consistent. Let's play good defensively. Let's be responsible. Let's wear teams down. I think we've seen that. It's been a theme so far. I know the Hurricanes knocked off the Rangers last night. They swept them. How good do the Hurricanes look?
Well,
I mean, that's just another very similar team to the Blue Jackets with some scoring. Sebastian Aho's been incredible for the Hurricanes. I mean, that guy is, I mean, he's worth every penny, and he's just exciting to watch. So,
well, let's very quickly on that. The Rangers go out. Henrik Lundqvist played the first two games, didn't look particularly good. Igor Shesterkin played yesterday. Lundqvist was his backup. 1 year left, $8.5 million on the contract. Has Henrik Lundqvist's time with the Rangers come to an end?
That, by him getting not playing in game three, that's pretty much the end of it, I think. I think it's now officially over. The torch has been kind of passed. I would say, yeah, that's one of those things where he's probably sitting there saying, we're an elimination game. I play the first couple, and I've done what I've done in my career. I'm, you know, I've put up some of the best numbers of all time, arguably the best Ranger goaltender ever. I just, it's It's hard to imagine him coming back from that unless they get some serious, injuries or I don't know what they're going to. I mean, I just don't see him coming back and playing anymore. Will he go somewhere else now? I don't know who's going to take a chance on him. I think he's definitely got some hockey left in him. We've seen him have good games this season. It hasn't been all bad, but and I don't want to blame him for the Rangers losing their first couple or losing the series either. I think he's been...
They were the underdog. I mean, the Hurricanes hit the ground running.
More often than not, the only thing about him, he just lets the odd kind of squeaky goal in from time to time. He's still more than capable of, carrying a team. It was just that first goal in game two under the... Anything under the arms from bad angles for me is not a great goal. I'm not too thrilled when I'm watching it, even from a coach's standpoint. When a goaltender lets those ones in, or like the Anderson goal from game one, I'm not thrilled with those goals. So, yeah, he's had a great career. You'd like to see guys like that win a cup. And it's just tough because you just see it. He has that burning desire to win. He has that makeup where that's what you want. You want that fire in your players, and even at his age, you want to see guys go out winning. That's at the end of the day, but that's usually not the way it happens. It's usually a younger guy coming in. It's an older guy that can't hold his game together, and it's tough to watch when you're watching guys that were such good players in their prime, right?
Blue Jays and Braves tonight on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. The Jays got smoked by Atlanta last night, and we'll get into the details of that with our buddy Tim Leeper, former Blue Jays first base coach, at 7:30. Vladdy was hitting fifth. Bo Bichette hasn't taken a walk yet this year, but the shutdown startup situation can't be helping the Blue Jays. The Raps are into Orlando. Well, not into Orlando. They are in Orlando, but playing Orlando as the road team. Tonight in the bubble, that's an 8:00 tip, third game of the 8 regular season games remaining. And we do have a start time for tomorrow night's Leafs game 3, 8:00 tomorrow night. The Leafs will be the road team against Columbus. David Amber, Adnan Virk, also coming up on the program. Hugh Burrell has sat down. He's beside me. We'll Burrell the lead next. We got $300 in Untuckit gift cards to give away or attempt to give away. We'll do that in about 15 minutes' time. Tim Leeper next hour. Hugh Burrell is here. It's Howdy. Time to Burrell the lead.
Yeah, let's do it. Busy Burrell the lead today, so let's get right to it. Mike Trout returned to the Angels lineup last night, 4 days after leaving the team to be with his wife for the birth of their first child, Beckham Aaron. Aw. How did it go? Pretty well.
Nola setting up outside. It's a breaking ball hammered out toward left center field. Hit well. Kyle Lewis back. That's gone. Big fly for Mike Trout. Welcome back. How's the song go? 1-0 Halos.
And the first inning, home run power continues for Trout.
That's probably for Beckham.
I'm sure that was. Homers in his first at bat, first day back, 407 feet for Trout.
Papa Trout. Going yard.
And everyone's just thinking, really? He homered in his first at-bat after becoming a father? Just got up to Seattle last night. Unbelievable.
Not really. It's not that unbelievable. He is the best player in the game. Trout calling on Major League Baseball to do more testing, saying, I think if you don't have testing every day, it's going to be tough. Always trying to catch up and trying to catch it. You know, if we get tested Friday, we have to wait 2 days to get the results back. You don't know what's going to happen in between. You've seen it with the Marlins. You've seen it with the Cardinals. It spreads fast. So Trout calling for more testing. Will baseball actually listen to him?
Jeez, I have no idea. They've bungled so much of this. The one thing is they've kept coronavirus, it seems, out of the Western hub, right? The American League and National League West.
So far, yeah.
The problem is, how frequently can you test? There's an incubation period for this illness. That's the problem. So you can be asymptomatic and not test positive and have it for a few days before you finally do. And in that period of time, you can spread it. I don't know if more testing is the solution here. This whole thing is a chance being taken.
The Marlins actually returned to action after more than a week off dealing with COVID. They beat the Orioles 4-0. And believe it or not, the Marlins are second place in the NL East right now. They're 3-1.
3-1. Yeah.
Cardinals' next game will be Friday against the Cubs after having their four-game series with Detroit postponed because of COVID.
Well, 750 win percentage is good, you.
Not bad. Yeah, it's not bad.
Dude, how many guys do they have to bring in? Because you can't play the guys with COVID.
Well, Don Mattingly was saying last night, either before or after the game, that he has no idea who some of these players on his team are. He's never seen them before.
Well, including Brian.
And he's running them out there.
Brian Moran, right? The left-handed sort of submariner guy the Jays had last week.
Yeah.
He got picked up on waivers by the Marlins.
Way to go, whoever you are. The NBA has done a pretty good job of keeping everybody safe in the Orlando bubble, but there have been hiccups, like the Clippers' Lou Williams leaving the bubble to attend a funeral and then stopping off at an Atlanta strip club for wings. Williams now says that visit to Magic City may not have been the smartest thing to do.
As far as a public safety issue goes, I probably could have made a better quality decision. I was a little naive in that aspect. At the time, I thought I was making a responsible decision. After looking back on it, with everything going on in the world and the pandemic, maybe it wasn't the best quality decision. So, I chalk it up as that, take my L and keep moving.
Well, at least now he sees the error of his ways. No one is on him for going to the funeral, of course. You care about somebody, they pass away. You absolutely have the right to go to the funeral. It was the stop off at Magic City for wings on the way back that I think raised a few eyebrows, Ziggy. Who doesn't like the strip club, really?
I mean, come on. Like, Williams, like, let's be, like, get real. Like, no, are you kidding me?
He says he understands it was a mistake.
Ziggy, man. He's got chicken wings named after him at Magic City. He's a frequent patron.
I don't know. It's just like, is he for real?
Yeah.
What's going through your mind? Like, there are some guys that are probably worried to go to a convenience store to pick up a bag of chips. And I mean, I think going to the strip club for chicken wings would be way down the list, would it not?
You know what this is like, Ziggy? This is like the guy who double parks at Starbucks and blocks traffic and says, oh, I'm just going in for 2 minutes. I'm going to be right back out. It's no big deal. Well, it is a big deal because you disrupt traffic. And then in this incident, you didn't adhere to the protocols and you risked the health of your teammates.
So how did it all come out, though? What's the story?
Well, there was a video posted to a friend of his, a rapper's Instagram account, that was quickly taken down. And then they first tried to sell it as an old photo or an old video.
Jack
Harlow, but then...
So there's a video of them in the strip club?
Yeah, and then they tried to say, well, this is a couple years old, and then, well, wait, no, why is Lou Williams wearing a current T-shirt?
Yeah.
And...
He got caught. But he did cop to it. So I guess he's learned his lesson. We'll move on. And we will move on, too. Cincinnati Reds' Joey Votto's back in the lineup after self-reporting COVID symptoms. The test came back negative. It's all cool. Reds have been filling the empty seats with pictures of fans. And that is something that the guy from Etobicoke can get behind.
Joey, what'd you think of the fan cutouts on the stand? Certainly gave the stadium a different look.
Are those people, did it, like, obviously they're real people, but are those, well, they're not real people, but obviously they're pictures of real people. Did they pay for them? I don't really know the story, background.
The fundraiser for the community fund. You can purchase them and the money goes to the community.
Oh, tremendous. So how about I buy an entire section and it's just my face? Like 100 pictures of me.
Okay.
Is that a good idea?
Mm-hmm.
Would that be weird?
All right, okay.
Let's get Charlie Frank on the horn. How much is that going to cost me?
About $70,000?
Oh, my God. All right, I'll take six sections. Everyone have a good night.
Six sections at $70,000. I'm no mathematician, but it's about $420,000.
$420,000.
I don't think he's going to buy six sections, but I bet you that he buys a complete section with nothing but pictures of him. He's the type of guy to do that, right?
He will do it.
Yeah.
Joey Votto, I mean, I've run into him a couple times, and he's from Toronto.
Yep, Etobicoke.
I think he's from Toronto. I've ran into him in Toronto. Is. Yeah. I ran into him a couple times.
Went to Richview High School in Etobicoke.
Okay, yeah. Well, I've run into him at the Toronto Athletic Club downtown on Bay Street. It's he's an absolute beauty. Whatever you see of him on TV, he's exactly the same. And from that interview, I mean, that media scrub, it's. I think he will honestly get a full section of himself. Like, I have no doubt in my mind.
Yeah, I'm not betting against it.
Yeah, he actually chased me down. Found out I was kind of speeding, driving through the desert in Arizona.
Mm-mm.
And he found out what I was actually doing, and he like tracked me down into the men's change room to actually talk about it because he was so blown away.
How fast were you going, Ziggy?
I'll explain the story at 7 o'clock. At 7, we'll tell the story at 7.
So he tracked you down in a men's gym locker room in Toronto, yes, to talk to you about a situation that happened in Arizona.
Yeah, I was playing for the Coyotes.
Oh.
I was driving to San Diego, and I was from San Diego back to I was in I drove from Scottsdale to San Diego, was out there for the week, and then drove back. It's about 5-6 hours. It's about 3 hours if you go over the speed limit. So I'm driving back, and I actually got pulled over in Yuma, but we'll talk about it.
All right, later. Top of the 7 o'clock hour, Ziggy.
I'm looking forward to this.
Pulled over in Yuma, Arizona.
And we'll wrap up with this. Gardner Minshew has made a name for himself in the NFL. The Jags quarterback, known for his flashy outfits and 70s flow. Well, he returned to the Jacksonville lineup yesterday after saying that an earlier COVID test resulted in a false positive.
Nah, it was brutal, dude. Like, yesterday, it had been, like, the first day of school, you know? Like, had my outfit picked out and everything. Had to stay at home. That sucks. Missed out playing with all my friends. But, yeah, you know, did not contract the virus. It took one luck at me. Ran the other way. It's probably in its best interest. So, here we are. We're back on Tuesday, ready to roll. Excited to go play some football.
So, if Matthew McConaughey played football...
I was
those
just,
would be the type of quotes he'd be getting.
Just saying, I'm thinking of some of McConaughey's famous quotes in Dazed and Confused.
All right.
So COVID-19 is not going to mess with Gardner Minshew. He says it would run the other way. Obviously.
Gardner Minshew.
Yeah, like, obviously.
Like, are you surprised at all? Like, come on.
No. Oh. I mean, it's a good
thing. Gardner Minshew the new Chuck Norris?
Wow. That's something to think
about. COVID-19 ain't messing with Gardner Minshew.
Punch COVID-19 right in its face. Well, good luck, Gardner.
I hope he's good for a while.
He's okay.
Yeah, but I hope he's good for a while, because then you get more of this over the years, right?
He's bit of a great quote.
Cult of personality develops.
Love it.
Adnan Virk at 8:30, David Amber at the top of the 8 o'clock hour, Tim Leeper at 7:30 will go over the Blue Jays-Atlanta game last night, the situation involving Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and will Bo Bichette take a walk at some point this year? Uh-oh, we're starting to nitpick on the kids, fairly or unfairly. And we want to give away $300 in Untuckit gift cards. We plan to do that next. 416-870-0590. 416-870-0590. If you want to be the contestant to play All or Nothing and potentially win those gift cards, call right now. Every day we attempt to give away $100 in Untuckit gift cards, and whenever we do not have a winner, the amount carries over. We have not had a winner this week. And so today, we're hoping to give away $300 in Untuckit gift cards. All or nothing. Three true or false questions. You got to get them all right or all wrong. So if you get that first one wrong, you want to get the next two wrong intentionally. Our contestant this morning, we had a little north and west of the city. Over to Cambridge for Billy. Hello, Billy.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
We're doing great, and we'll be doing even better if you walk away a winner. So, Ziggy, take it away with question number one for Billy.
Billy, all right, first one. In the Leafs 3-0 win over the Jackets yesterday, all of the goals were scored by forwards. True or false?
False.
That is correct. Matthew Tavares and Riley actually put that empty netter in. Gotta love empty net goals, right?
Yes, sir.
Man, oh yeah.
Wow, Ziggy, I've never...
Ziggy really loves empty net goals.
Oh, jeez. You better believe it.
What percent of your NHL goals...
Oh, I mean, I didn't get on the ice.
If it crossed mine, it's in.
All right, you're in great shape here, Billy. You got to get the next two correct, and you're a winner.
Okay, perfect. Billy, before we get to your second question, can I call you Sweet William?
Sweet William, sure.
Is that okay? Cool.
That's awesome.
All right, Sweet William. At the age of 21 years and 158 days, the Dallas Mavericks' Luka Doncic became the youngest player on Earth, or at least in NBA history, to score 30 points, 20 rebounds, and 10 assists in a game. True or false?
Oh, I got no clue. False.
Oh, Sweet Will.
Sweet Will, nothing.
Oh, buddy. That's okay. The answer is true, obviously. Luka Doncic finished up with 34 points, 20 boards, and 12 helpers in the Mavs' 114-100 win over the Kings.
Yeah, you're digging pretty deep if you're knowing what's going on in a Mavs-Kings bubble game.
Yeah, you really got to think about your life at that point, really.
Yeah, it's
you got to do this one for me, Billy.
Sweet Billy. William, sorry, man.
And the third question would have been, even though he's been struggling, Vladdy Jr. was still batting cleanup last night for the Blue Jays in Atlanta, and the answer to that question would have been false. He had been dropped to the 5 spot in the order. Bichette, Biggio, Teoscar, Lourdes Gurriel Jr., and then Vladdy, the top 5 in the Blue Jays lineup last night, which, by the way, didn't matter because they got smoked in Atlanta, and they'll try and do it again tonight, a game you can listen to right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We play All or Nothing at about 6:50 each and every morning. Tomorrow morning, we'll try to give away $400 in Untuckit gift cards. Tim Leeper next hour. Ziggy got pulled over for speeding or something in Yuma, and Joey Votto wanted to confront him about it in a Toronto gym's men's locker room. I'm having trouble piecing that together. Yuma, Arizona, Toronto, Ontario. Votto plays in Cincinnati but does his spring training in Arizona. Ziggy played for the Coyotes once. There's got to be some sort of connection there. Oh, and we'll revisit the Leafs. Huge, huge win yesterday. The latest on Jake Muzzin, and we'll ask you who you think should replace Muzzin in the lineup. Down with the Hall & Oates for the goal song, or are you down for the win song?
I like the Hall & Oates song. Don't get me wrong, I like it, but I just wish they would change it up year to year. And I guess this is their victory song.
This is the win song, yeah.
I remember listening to this tune as a kid on the radio. CFRA.
Up in Ottawa. Ottawa.
Yeah.
My old stomping grounds. Of course, it was a news talk station by that point, but.
Yeah. With General Grant in the morning. Remember General Grant?
I don't, but. Yeah. He used to say tally-ho or something, and that was the sign for the kids to jump on the school bus. New school day would begin. Big days of Ottawa Valley morning radio.
Yeah.
Little Hugh Burrell.
Long for those days.
Running off to running off to school. And while Hugh Burrell was running off to school in the Ottawa Valley, Mike Zygmunis was getting pulled over in Yuma, Arizona.
Yeah.
And then getting called on it years later in a men's change room in Toronto by Joey Votto.
First off, before you tee that up again, I've only been pulled over a couple times in Toronto. I actually have another story about getting pulled over in Toronto because I've been pulled over twice for speeding.
Yeah, slow down.
In the most ridiculous spots.
Do you do ever. The whole, hey, do you know who I am kind of thing? Do you do that?
No. I've been pulled over once doing 50 or a 48, just under 50 in a 30 because it was 40 and it went down to 30 through like a residential area. You know, they changed all the... Yeah.
Ignorance of the law is no excuse.
I'm just saying, I was doing 48 in a 40, then it dropped to 30, and the guy was just waiting there for me.
Okay, so and you were doing that in your Civic with a spoiler and the turbocharged vroom vroom? Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. And the other time, and I mean, if we our listeners right now, they know this spot I got pulled over in. I was going, I can't remember the exact, what's the one-way street going east, is that Adelaide
heads east, yeah, Richmond west, so Adelaide, yeah,
Adelaide towards Don Valley, and you kind of go up and over the highway and you kind of loop around to go north. I was on that ramp and it's actually a 50 and not a 60. I got pulled over doing 65 on that.
That's my neighborhood, Zig. That is a speed trap.
You know what I'm talking about?
That is a speed trap.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
I didn't think the Mazda 3 could handle a corner at that speed, Zig. That's pretty good.
It's not even a corner. You kind of go up and over the highway,
yeah.
And you'd think it's a 60 at least, or you're going on the highway, you're going to start to speed up a little bit, but it's actually 50, and if you go over 50, they do set up there. Yeah. Anyways.
All right, so.
Don't get me started on.
Tell us about the 310 to Yuma.
Yeah. So what's the Yuma Votto story? Because we got to get to the Leafs.
Yeah. Okay. So I get pulled. I'm coming back from San Diego to Phoenix. And if anybody has driven through, made that drive, I think it's Highway 5. There's literally nothing. It's straight away. I couldn't see the end of the road. I couldn't see either way side to side. It's like middle of the desert. Mexico is about 2 miles off to the right. There's nobody anywhere. I'm talking, I don't see a car for 20 minutes. All of a sudden, the sirens go off, and I pull my car over. I don't even wait for him to catch up for me, to me. So I just pull my car over. I was going really fast. The speed limit was 75. In the state of Arizona, if you do 1 mile over 85 or 20 over, it's a suspension of license. So let's just say I was going faster than 85 miles an hour, enough for Joey Votto to hear me and to chase me down at the Toronto Athletic Club in Toronto. So I'm working out at the club and then I'm getting changed, getting ready to go in the shower. All of a sudden, some guy who is Joey Votto comes up to me. But I mean, I don't know what Joey Votto looks like. Would you guys know? I mean, okay.
I would, yeah. Yeah, I would
okay.
know.
Okay, Huey, would you know? Yeah, would you know Joey? Like,
I barely know
on?
What a Mike Zygmunis looks like. I haven't seen you in so long.
Yeah, well, there you go. So you'd have a hard time as well. So I don't know that it's Joey Votto, though. It's just some guy to me comes up to me. I'm like half getting changed. I'm ready to go in the shower. And he's like, hey, man, you got pulled over doing how much in the desert? And I was like, oh, yeah. I had this little sports car there in the... playing for the Coyotes. I know, bad decision in my 20s, but
Mazda Miata.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. And he's just like, he wanted to know every single detail about it because he said he's been pulled over going really fast a couple times and he wanted to know what exactly happened. And I told him the whole story, how the cop pulls me over and everything. But I didn't find out till later. I went to my buddy who runs the therapy center. I go, Joey came up to us. He goes, that's Joey Votto. I'm like, Joey Votto? He's like, yeah, Joey Votto. And I'm like, oh God. So then I've seen him a couple times in there because he goes in for therapy in his off season. But yeah, complete beauty. And just he was talking about some of the cars he had, and I'm like, what does a guy like that drive for? Like, do you not get to that point and you're just like, I'm gonna have a personal driver from now on?
Yeah, so like, you're gonna hire a Jeeves. At some point. Some people, I think, do like driving. I think they do like driving.
I don't know, but
the Reds are good. The Reds have their spring training in Arizona, and so he would spend enough time down there that he would be familiar with the laws. All right, well, there you go. So
yeah,
that's
my Joey Votto that I didn't know. Joey Votto came up to me. Hopefully he's not listening to this right now, because I pretended like I knew who he was the whole time, but I mean, I don't know what guys look. I mean, I don't know what athletes look you know, in their civvies gear, right? It's tough, right?
I can guarantee you. I can guarantee you he's not listening right now. I promise you that. Joey Votto, if you are listening, text in to 590-590. I guarantee you. I guarantee you he's not listening.
Podcasting. You can listen on the pod.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. That's right. And it just wouldn't be live. We'll get Tim Leeper on the program in about 20 minutes' time. The Blue Jays losers in Atlanta last night, and they'd had a five-day layoff in between just because of COVID-19 concerns with the Phillies, who would have been their weekend opponent. So it's the start-up, the shutdown, and the start-up again, and they struggled with it. And I know some people are going to say, well, the Marlins looked pretty good against the Orioles last night, and then I would remind you that it's the Orioles. So a couple of different scenarios playing out there. The Jays back in action tonight in Atlanta. Wagner Wilner with the call. A game you can listen to right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and a game you can watch on Sportsnet. Shulman and Buck Martinez will have the call there. The Raptors play Orlando 8 o'clock tonight. That's the third of their eight remaining regular season games before the playoffs begin. The Raptors are firmly in second place in the Eastern Conference, and it looks like they won't move. They are too far ahead of third place Boston and too far back of first place Milwaukee for anything to change there. So this is effectively a gear up for them, and they have looked great against the Lakers and the Heat in their first two games. And the Maple Leafs bounce back, 3-0, dominant shutout win. If anything, that 3-0 score was unfair to the Maple Leafs. That could have been a 6 or a 7-0 game. John Tortorella says, we sucked. Toronto was great. There was no need to analyze it any further from Tortorella's perspective. David Amber will join us at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. We'll get Adnan Verk's thoughts on the game as well when he jumps on at 8:30. But Ziggy, huge, huge win for the Leafs. Let's start, though, with the Jake Muzzin situation. We aren't clear on the extent of the injury at this point. He was clearly moving his extremities. That was encouraging. It's believed to be a neck situation. There may be a quarantine that comes into play here because he was taken to hospital. And we've thrown the Wednesday troll poll up on Twitter. It's Scotty Mack thinks at Mike Zigamanis at Hugh W. Burl at Fan 590. Which Leafs defenseman do you want to see replace Jake Muzzin in Game 3? Rasmus Sandin or Marty Morenson? Almost 300 votes in a half an hour, and 78% are with you. Rasmus Sandin's the guy.
He's going to bring a little bit of offensive punch. I think he can handle the physical stuff. I'm interested to see what kind of step he's made. You got to remember, every time you see a Rasmus Sandin, whether they're playing or not, every time you see him every 3-4 months, he's going to change. He's going to get bigger. He's going to get stronger. He's going to pick up the game a little bit better. Yeah, you're going to see him do more things with the puck. You're going to see him, you know, his anticipation's going to get better. We're going to see him develop into that all-star defenseman that I think he can become. Having him play and come into Game 3 is a tall order, right? This is a physical Jackets team. We've seen the way they've played Game 1 and 2 and how well they are at forechecking and how in sync they are. They play as a five-man group, maybe one of the best in the league at that. So that is tough for such a young guy to come in, but I think he can handle it. I think it's one of those things where it is going to add a little bit more offense. You make what you want of games 1 and 2. I think there is a side of the Leafs where I'd like to see a little bit more creativity. I'd like to see a little bit more from the defense. And if you bring him into the lineup over Morenson, you're going to get that. On the other hand, with Morenson, you're going to get that penalty killer that's very similar to Muzzin, not as effective. You're going to get a big body like Muzzin, not as physical, but finishes his check and is tough to play against in most areas of the ice. And somebody a little bit more reliable, right? A little bit more experience. They trust Morenson. And either way, they're two nice options for the Leafs right now. I like where the team's headed. I like where their game is at. And it's concerning because of what Muzzin actually does for you. He's a leader. He's a guy that I'm sure settles the room down. He's a physical presence on the ice. It's a big loss regardless. I can't see him coming back in this series. I'm watching it right now on Sportsnet. I'm watching the replay of it, seeing some angles I didn't get to see last night, and it's not good when you see the trainer come out.
Well, it was the fact the trainer came out, Ziggy, and obviously Jake was sitting up and kind of twiddling his hands through his glove there, and I guess that was just to show, hey, I can feel my extremities, or that's what we're counting on. But the fact that he got stretchered out, that play, I got to say, like off the hop, it looked relatively innocent. The cross check itself, we can have a whole separate conversation about whether this league is adequately calling cross checking. And Pierre-Luc Dubois, Columbus is losing in the third period late, down two at the time. If he thinks he's taken a penalty by doing that, he's not cross-checking Jake Muzzin the way that he did. But clearly that is not called, or not called often enough, such that Dubois would have any hesitation. So there's that conversation. But then it just looked relatively innocuous the way that he went down, Muzzin did, into the back of Bjorkstrand's leg. I don't know if there was a whiplash factor or what, but man, it went from looking relatively innocent to scary in a split second.
And I don't know how vicious of a cross check that was from Dubois. I mean, it's Muzzin was more or less losing his balance. I didn't see it as something that vicious. I really think he ran into Bjorkstrand, and that's kind of what happened. He went in kind of face first and going down, and that head going back up. You got to remember, you're trying to the reason you get injured in situations like that is you're bracing yourself, right? I'm sure if he just gets hit and you go in unexpectedly, a lot of times you can get out of it okay. But when you know you're going down and you brace for certain situations like that, that's usually when you get hurt really bad. You know what I'm kind of trying to say? Where you're as soon as you tense up, that's where the bad injury can happen.
Yeah, it's just unfortunate because Muzzin is so crucial to this team, and we just have to hope. We don't know right now. We just don't know the state of the situation. We believe he was taken to hospital. There is a provision in the return to play protocol which requires anybody who is taken out of the bubble, which includes a visit to hospital, to provide four consecutive negative PCR tests over four consecutive days, so one a day. If they adhere to that, and there is an allowance for medical discretion. So let's just pretend for a second that Jake was healthy enough to play tomorrow night. There are doctors who could clear him to play, not just physically with the injury, but also potentially with the COVID-19 protocols. So that, leaving that out there, the general understanding is that you must provide four consecutive days of four negative tests, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Game five would be on Sunday between the Leafs and the Blue Jackets. So he could return in this series from a COVID-19 perspective, even if he's healthy enough, if it goes the full shot. But it's a real unfortunate situation. And you can vote in our poll at Scotty Mac Thinks, at Mike Zigamanis, at Fan590. Which Leafs defenseman, Marinson or Sandin, do you want to see replace Jake Muzzin in the lineup tomorrow night, Game 3? From my perspective, I look at it this way, Zig. The Leafs bounced back. You called it. I felt like they would because they've done it at times over the course of the season. But I gave three examples last hour. I'll repeat them now. A 6-2 loss at home versus Chicago was followed up by a 5-2 win at Nashville. A second bad trip to Pittsburgh. The first one was the game that effectively got Babcock fired. He did coach a few nights later in Vegas, but it was the performance in Pittsburgh in November that effectively got him fired. But the second bad performance in Pittsburgh on February 18th was followed up by arguably one of their cleanest games of the season two nights later at home against Pittsburgh. And then two nights after that was the David Ayers game against Carolina, the 6-3 loss to the Hurricanes. The Zamboni driver and goal beat them February 22nd. Three nights later was their next game, a 4-3 win at Tampa Bay. this team has shown the ability and the willingness, the capability to bounce back. And I'm thinking of John Tavares's comment after the game last night. When we play like we did today, game two, we have complete confidence in one another. My question is why should I, as a Leafs fan who has watched this team play every game this year, pre-COVID, post-COVID, why should I buy in now that it's different? This team has been riddled with inconsistency. And so if somebody wants to challenge me on that fact and call me a cynic, go right ahead. But prove me wrong. Don't just say, you're being negative. Prove me wrong. Prove me wrong. And I would be more than happy for the Maple Leafs to prove me wrong by reversing course on the inconsistency and carrying yesterday's effort into tomorrow night's game. I don't care if you're dominant for 60 consecutive minutes the way that the Leafs were yesterday, but play better than Columbus and play well enough to win the game, and I'll be happy with it. But they can't revert. Well, they can't revert.
One thing you need to look for, I kind of touched on it earlier, is that, and I didn't get into it, is watch the lull now. Columbus came out, has played hard both games. Kind of see them wearing down a little bit in game two. The Leafs have come out and have played a game that they, you're right, typically they haven't played like this throughout the year. I mean, can you pick of a 120 minutes against a really tough opponent where it was this good? It's very hard. Especially after you lose the first game like that, they come back and play well, and now you're worried already, obviously, from the consistency standpoint. Can they do it again? I'm more concerned. I'd watch for teams that came out of the gate hard, and this is not just the Leafs or Columbus, but you have such a long layoff. You're excited to kind of get back to playing. You come out, play well. You give everything you have. You're from a conditioning standpoint and even a mental standpoint, you're going to have some kind of lull or dip. Which teams aren't going to do that? That's kind of what I'm looking for now. After two or three games, that's when it will kind of hit you after such a long layoff, especially without training camp and getting into a restart or a training camp to start the season the way what you're used to, right? None of these players have ever done this. So you're going to kind of see that a little bit of, you know what I mean? You're going to see a little bit of these teams getting a little bit worn down. And it's just you're just going to have fatigue set in, right? You come out, you play hard. It's going to drop off a little bit. Whose conditioning's the best? Who's mentally prepared to kind of, keep the ball rolling? That's kind of what I'm looking for. So with this Leafs team, you're concerned about the consistency issue. And I'm more looking at it like, okay, you played two hard games. Can you keep that going? Are you going to get tired? Are you mentally going to get tired? Physically, can you keep this level of playing up? That's I'm looking at it from that standpoint.
Yeah, and I think, look, the math is obvious. The percentage of teams that win the third game in a best of five series when it's tied 1-1 is like 3/4, right? In the 75% range. That is obvious in and of itself. The other factor here that I would add into that is that the Leafs and the Jackets happen to play their back-to-back in this play-in round because each team is doing it. The Flames and Jets did it for games 2 and 3. The Flames smoked the Jets in game 3, bouncing back from a game 2 loss the night before. The Leafs and Jackets will play games 3 and 4 on back-to-back days. So tomorrow and then on Friday. For the team that loses tomorrow, it will be obviously a back-to-back, a 3rd and 4, and a 4th and 6. You're asking a lot of yourself to, down 2-1, win a game you must win with not your best legs, and then try to storm back and win this thing in 5. I think it is absolutely crucial, not just from the percentage and math perspective, but absolutely crucial that the Leafs take care of business tomorrow night. If they go into this thing down 2-1 and we do a show on Friday morning, Ziggy, it's going to be real hard for me not to sit here and think that it's over.
Yeah, we've heard the percentages, right? 75%,
if you can win game three after splitting the first two. The Leafs know what's on the line. They knew the deal. It was a they knew it was a do or die game two. You can't fall down 2-0. It's all but over 98%. I think they're going to have the same mentality going in. At the same time, if the game doesn't go the way they want, game three, they're more than capable. I'm okay with them winning a couple. Back-to-back is going to be really tough, but I know they can do that, so I'm not as concerned as I was for game two. But, yeah, it's all but over. I'm something you got to remember, it's going to be tough, right? You've been getting your line changes. You've been getting the guys out there that you want, and now you're not going to get that. Look at the look at Matthews' goal. They've been going up against Jones and Werenski for the most part, right? Then you have in that goal, you have Murray out there, right? And you have a forward back. You had Bjorkstrand back on Matthews. That first goal, I don't think happens if Seth Jones and Werenski are on the ice. So you have Murray kind of stepping up on Hyman. I lets the puck through him. And then you also have Bjorkstrand back because Werenski jumped into the play and was slow getting back on Matthews. Matthews doesn't have that kind of space if that's Werenski or Seth Jones on the ice. They haven't had it throughout the first two games, and they wouldn't have had it in that situation. So, yeah, I love that goal. I love the play by Matthews. That's a if your kid's watching that or you have kids and you're trying to coach them, your coach out there listening to this, that's a perfect example. Drive the middle, kick the puck out wide, and keep going to the net where you can kind of get a rebound or a redirection like that. So I love that goal, love the play from Hyman, but let's be honest with ourselves. That was Bjorkstrand. That was a forward back on Matthews in the middle of the ice. So that play doesn't happen if it is a defenseman. Most of the are going to get up, especially a Seth Jones-Werenski. That's not happening. Matthews is not getting a clean redirection on that.
And let's just remember, I mean, we understand everybody can change on the fly, but Columbus is the home team for games 3 and 4 of this series. So John Tortorella, icings accepted, will be able to get the matchups that he wants as he will have last change. We'll get back into the hockey with our buddy David Amber at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. We'll welcome Adnan Virk to the program at 8:30. And coming up next, the startup, the shutdown, and the restart and the effect that it has on the Toronto Blue Jays, who did not look good last night in their return to play in Atlanta. Our good buddy Tim Leeper is with us next. All right, I'm in studio. Ziggy is no bluffing from Scarborough this morning.
What'd you say?
Said you're in Scarborough. You're not bluffing. Scarborough bluffs, no? Okay.
Yeah, no, I like that, actually.
Did you? Actually.
I just wasn't sure if I heard it correctly.
There's no better word in the English language than actually. You actually did a good job. It implies like you were just totally stunned. Actually, that was funny. Actually, that was smart. Actually, I like that.
Well, I didn't know if you actually meant to say it. Or that's the thing. I was like, did he actually know what he did?
Most of the time, no, but...
And I need to say something.
Well, then you better.
I do not live anywhere near the Bluffs. That's like the nice part of Scarborough. Nothing against the what part I'm from, but I do not live near the Bluffs. That's like, that's where Anthony Stewart's from. You know.
Oh, Stewie. Okay.
The big time sports panelist now.
I can't tell if you're taking a dig at your neighborhood or if you're trying to represent. That's.
Well, I'm always representing, but okay. I'm just trying to say I don't live anything. My neighborhood does not resemble the Bluffs at all.
All right. Well, what we need to do then is get a little hoity-toity, get a little shishi. Somebody who definitely had sushi for dinner last night. only after he had some caviar. Tim Leeper from Casa del Leeper up in the unnamed town of Muskoka is with us. Are you here loud and clear or what?
That was a very nice segue.
Oh, my God.
Into an intro right there.
Studio quality.
Actually, that was very good.
What? Oh, it's like, Leap, you're sitting right beside me.
Honestly,
I just can't see you today.
Leap's coming in more clear than you are, Scotty. So I don't know what kind of connection he has, but I think they got him on a better line than you.
It's funny you should say that, too, because allegedly I make some of the better questions, too, which was well documented in my last
Yes.
I'm not surprised.
All right. Leap is the former first base and outfield coach of the Blue Jays, does some work with the San Francisco Giants, and, of course, is a regular here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So let's start with the Jays, Leap, and last night. And just the general premise, Matt Shoemaker talked about this. He struggled in the game last evening, and he talked about it afterward. The notion of the relative quick startup, the indirect effect that COVID-19 had on the Blue Jays, it shut down their series against the Phillies on the weekend. So they went Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, without playing any games, and then they try to get back on the horse last night in Atlanta, and they immediately fall off. The startup, the shutdown, the startup, that's real tough on a team, and what we don't know is whether it's going to happen again, and maybe again after that. Who knows with COVID?
That, I mean, this is the nature of baseball right now, isn't it? And this could go for any team at any time, and, you know, plus you're going to have to factor in now they're going home to Buffalo. And, you know, and that's going to be a little bit different for them as well. It's just going to have to be something that they deal with all year. And, you know, baseball is such a game of routine and just doing the same thing day in and day out. There's nothing sexy about it. But that's when you're at your best, is when you follow these routines. And to get out of it to the extreme that they have, like, and to have a game like yesterday, like, it's totally understandable. I mean, Shoemaker, for example, is a guy that really depends on command. And his pitches were great. Like, he was throwing. I love how he works all four corners of the plate. I love how he works his slider, all those things. But if he's just off a little bit, you know, you get into a situation where you have to groove one. And he had those situations last night. So this is going to be something they're going to have to deal with. And yeah, it's really difficult. But yeah, it's also the reality that they're playing in this year.
Yeah, but when I see a guy like that, and most guys complain about not enough rest, right? It's like, oh, I got to come back a day early. But obviously situations like this, you have a couple teams have COVID run through them. You have, another break in the season. Why not run Shoemaker through some kind of simulated game? Or do they just not know because things are up in the air right now with the schedule and they don't know who's playing when? Why not run a guy, you know, give him a simulate a kind of a game for him on the weekend to keep him fresh, or put somebody else in?
Yeah, that's you don't have anybody else. I think that's the biggest reason, and that's a great point too. And I'm not so sure they didn't do that in Philly, but I think maybe or in Washington when they were there after the Philly series got canceled, you know, maybe just the abruptness of the change of schedule and the fact that they were in another team's ballpark and maybe didn't have access to it. I think in an ideal world, if you knew this situation was coming on, and I have all the faith in the world in a guy like Pete Walker, because I've worked with him for so long, that they would absolutely put this guy through a simulated game. But I don't know if the situations presented themselves or not. And, like, just to throw somebody else in there, you know, I think they would be in the same situation because they wouldn't have time for the sim game or whatever. I think their thinking, I would assume, was just to throw their very best guy coming out of this thing to hope to get them on the right track. And, you know, again, after a 9-day layoff, it's tough. I mean, given everything that's normal, like, that's absolutely a great idea. Run them through a simulated game best you can, but I don't know if they really had the opportunity to do it this time.
Tim Leeper with us. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And by the way, Leap is with us from his radio studio in Muskoka. Like, it is crisp. It is clear. You've never sounded better, Leap.
I might have to go up there to do the show. Are you on a body of water? Or are you in the forest?
I'm actually close to a body of water, and then, you know, I sail by BX's house. Yeah. so the We're close, but it's great. Hey, listen, we'll come up here. The maids will take care of us. We got the bonbons and the kale omelets to begin with. Yeah,
it's yeah, on. Kale. I heard yeah. the smoothies were going. Hey, I listened to the show for a couple weeks. Yeah, I heard the smoothie. Is there a Vitamix up there? I'm in for sure.
Is there a Vitamix? There's two Vitamixes.
By the way, and what you also know is if there is a road, either paved or gravel, that we are required to cross to get to the body of Waterleap, neither of us are coming. You know, we have standards. Like we need to be able to descend a flight of stairs and end up on a dock. And if we can do that, you know, we'll jump in.
You're gonna have to cross my fire pit to get there. That's yeah, not a very that's not a very safe proposition there.
Walking on coals. that's the test. Can you survive a weekend at Leaps? A weekend at Bernie's or a weekend at Leafs. Kind of two of the same thing. Okay, so let's go. You know what I'm going to do, Leap? You put the one down for the fastball, and I'm going to throw you the curveball here. I'm not going to cooperate with your desire for me to bring up Vladdy's name. I'm going to focus in on Bo Bichette. He hadn't taken a walk yet this year, and he's only got a handful of extra base hits. What are you seeing out of him?
I would have say same thing. I'm gonna stick to the same lines that I stuck for Vladdy. Like he missed a bunch of days too. I'm sure he's about that 25 at bat threshold. I don't know how many at bats he has. I'm sure you have that right there.
Let me quickly pull it up. Yes, I don't want to get it wrong, so I'm gonna go to Baseball Reference. Thank God for the internet. He has 21 at bats for a total of 21 plate appearances. Yeah, he hasn't taken a walk, hasn't been hit by a pitch, hasn't had a sac fly.
Well, I think then he needs to crowd the plate a little bit more just to get hit by
the
pitch.
He needs to pull the Anthony Rizzo. Yeah,
yeah, or the Timmy Lupus and Bad News Bears. But, like, listen, it's 25 at-bats in. Walks come in bunches. But Bo's also a guy that swings a bat. And again, a lot of these things – and it's unfortunately, like, it's a 60-game season, and these games all count. But you're going to go through little stretches where you don't walk or the things don't come. Is it time to press the panic button after 25 at-bats? No. But the big thing this year, it's 60-game season, so those 25 at-bats are like 75 at-bats. So, again, not to worry. He's a guy that started short ramp-up, started the season, and then missed time, and he hasn't had, you know, out of those 25 at-bats, he hasn't had more than 12, you know, in a row. Like, so that's basically three games. I mean, you just need time to get your legs underneath you. You need times to, you know, just to feast on some pitching that maybe, you know, that's a good matchup for you. And unfortunately, he just hasn't had the reps yet for me. So I think the biggest concerning thing is, as a team, is the fact that they're not hitting with guys on base and guys in scoring position. And, you know, a lot's been said of the bullpen and all the things that, you know, it's well documented. You know, they adjust the bullpen. They didn't have the bullpen depth. Every game's been close. But if you look at their batting average with runners in scoring position, like if you just get a few hits in those situations, then we probably don't have this bullpen discussion like we've been having for the last 2 weeks either.
Now with Hyunjin Ryu expected to pitch tonight, what do you think about them moving him up in the rotation? Is that going to cause problems? I know they obviously don't want to make him wait like they did with Shoemaker. Hasn't had a good outing his last two games. What do you make of Ryu so far? And apparently he got a haircut, and that's supposed to solve anything. So explain that to me. I mean, I'm all up for changing my routine, and I have my superstitions, but usually a haircut doesn't do it for me.
I'm gonna have a tough time commenting on the haircut thing. Yeah, but if that works, that's great. I'm gonna go out and get a haircut here and try to improve my fortunes. I think it's great they moved him up. I mean, you signed him to be your number one guy. So, like, again, you know, you want to get him in there as many times as possible. He's a touch and feel guy. You know, he's not overpowering. So his success relies on changing speeds, really, really, really relies on corners and hitting the corners and hitting the spots. I know his fastball velocity the last game kind of dipped a little bit. Shouldn't be a big concern with him. You know, but it was the second game out again after a quick ramp up, and I think just the more times you get him out here because of the nature of the way he pitches with his touch, his feel, with his command, you know, I think it's good to get him out there. And again, you signed him to be your number one guy. You need to get him out there on the hill as many times as you possibly can. And I think this is a really good thing. Unfortunately, it puts a couple of other guys back, you know, to the weekend. But at the same time, those guys weren't guys that, you know, that had a ton of starts already this year anyway. So, you know, with him, it's a feel thing. And I just think he needs to get out there. I think it's also like a little bit of a matchup thing, you know, besides the fact it's a short ramp up. He's also changing leagues. He hasn't seen a lot of these teams before. And just coming to a new place with a lot of expectations. I mean, I think that's a lot at no matter who you are. So I think just saying, getting him out there, getting him set, I think he's really good. If you look at him, he's really not that far off. And if he's just hitting his locations a little bit better than he did last time, I think the outing's a lot different than it was.
Leap, just very quickly before we get you out of here, switching gears to Shohei Ohtani. So he comes off of the Tommy John surgery for the LA Angels, and now he's got a right forearm strain, and he is not going to pitch again, Angels manager Joe Maddon says, in 2020. This is a guy who can hit. He will be a DH for the Angels for the foreseeable future. He is someone who can play the outfield. We've always wanted to see the guy who can play the field on days he doesn't pitch or hit on days he doesn't pitch and then go out every 5 days and pitch. Kind of takes us back to Babe Ruth and some of the stars of yesteryear that we never got to see growing up. What I'm wondering is, do the Angels, given the Tommy John and now the forearm, do the Angels reach a point where they decide that Shohei Ohtani is an everyday position player for them and that's it?
You paid a lot of money and you got to keep him in the lineup. It just shows how hard it is to be able to do these things. I know it's in a perfect world, it looks great. And I know he did a little bit in Japan, but the thing in Japan, I think they play less games per week than we do. And when you're playing 6 days a week, it's really, really hard to be able to do that. And the other thing is, you paid a ton of money and he is a real threat offensively. Like, he's a really good offensive player. So you got to keep him on the field, whether it be pitching or hitting. And obviously right now the pitching thing is not going to be the thing that keeps him on the field. And if he hurts his arm pitching, then you're not going to have his bat available either. So you better throw him out there and get as many at bats as you possibly can with him and get the value for him. Whether they revisit the pitching thing later or not, I don't know, but it sure looks like the early returns are like let's just keep this guy in the batter's box and try to get him 500-600 at bats and see where this takes us. And the fact that you have the DH all the time, maybe the Angels always had the DH, but the fact that you got a full-time DH now too, like it fits. You know, the other issue is that they got Pujols, who's also probably needs the DH a lot, and that's where their problems kind of come into play.
Well, you sounded great this morning, pal. We're on our way up after the show. We'll sit in the studio with ready. You tomorrow.
Sounds good. Hey, as a fan of the show, I just want to say it's so great to have Ziggy back.
Yes, Leap. Checks in the mail, buddy. Checks in the mail.
Keep feeding Scotty those good questions, man. We know you're carrying the show.
I'll tell you this right now. Ziggy's throwing a commercial after that comment. That's the
punishment. I gotta throw it to a commercial. Scotty knows how to make me nervous. Knows how to get me back. Oh yeah, you can take it from here.
All right. I'm tuning in right now just to hear the intro to All or Nothing. That's all I want.
We'll do this next week, Leap. Thanks a lot.
Thanks,
okay,
Leap.
Guys. Talk to you later.
Tim Leaper, a former first base and outfield coach of the Blue Jays and a regular here on Leadoff. On Sportsnet 590, The Fan, we got David Amber, we got Adnan Virk coming up next hour, and up next, Hughes Daily public service announcement. Sports are all back. We'll play Who the Hell is Playing and When. David Amber, Adnan Virk, next hour. And since there's so much sports going on, we don't really know when anything is. So here's Hugh with the daily public service announcement. Who the hell is playing and when?
And when and where? That's a very good question, Scotty. Let's talk about the Leafs game tomorrow. You can find that 8:00 on 680 News. So make a note. Tomorrow, the Leafs game is on 680 News at 8:00. As for today, full slate of games again. Six games in total, highlighted by the Habs and the Penguins. That series tied up in a game apiece. That game, 8:00 on Sportsnet. At a 10:30, Oilers and Blackhawks. One of those teams looks to go up 2-1. That's on the full Sportsnet TV network. Also on radio, Sportsnet 590 The Fan at 10:30. Also on the fan before that, Jays and Braves. Hopefully they score more than one run tonight. That game's 7 o'clock. You can catch it on TV, Sportsnet 360. And at 8 o'clock, the Raptors are in action on Sportsnet 1. Raptors looking for a 7th straight victory overall, looking to sweep the season series.
Longest 6-game winning streak in sports history.
It really is.
It really is.
All the times, sportsnet.ca.
Adnan Virk coming up at 8:30, and we'll get into the baseball situation, just some of the top storylines around the league, and plus how some teams are dealing with COVID-19. Will we get an NFL season that starts on time? And Adnan's a big hockey guy as well. Some thoughts on the Maple Leafs, and we'll spin it with David Amber. Who replaces Jake Muzzin in the lineup? The latest on Jake Muzzin's status, and the Maple Leafs, can they ride the wave and bring in Game 3 what they brought in Game 2. David Amber's with us next. Big hour on the program. Adnan Virk coming up in about a half an hour's time. We've got a bunch to get to with him. We'll stick to hockey with David Amber, our good buddy, the host of the NHL on Sportsnet, one of the hosts of Hockey Night in Canada. And Ziggy, you know what David loves, right? David loves to be confronted with the hot take right out of the gate. And he loves nothing more than a good old troll poll on his weekly visit. So I'm going to throw the troll poll on Twitter out one more time. Get it at Scotty Mac Thinks, at Mike Zigamanis, at Hugh W. Burrell, at Fan 590. Our thoughts are with Jake Muzzin, and that is first and foremost, hoping for a quick recovery for Jake, that everything is okay, and A, for his health, and then B, that he can get back to the Maple Leafs as quickly as possible. But here is the question. Which defenseman would you like to see replace Jake Muzzin for the Maple Leafs in Game 3? Is it Marty Marinson or is it Rasmus Sandin? Ziggy has put his hand up for Sandin. I've said, you know what? Sandin, he's a big part of the future. I don't mind the idea of going with the veteran hand in Marinson. Well, 700 votes are in, and 81% are saying Rasmus Sandin. David Amber, what do you expect?
Hey, guys. First of all, Ziggy, welcome back. It's been a while. It's good to have you back.
Thanks.
On the airwaves. I'm going to go with the majority here. I'm going to say Sandin, and I just think, you know what Marinson is. You see his upside. You see where his deficits lie. And with Sandin, there's a lot of upside. And sometimes players get thrust in these situations, and they rise to the occasion. So I'd like to think you're in a situation where you're not facing elimination. I'm not saying you have a big margin of error, but Sandin might be a really interesting guy to throw in there, and he can move the puck. He works well with the team we saw yesterday, and he might be the guy that could fill the void.
Yeah, I'm with you on Sandin. I think he brings a lot to the team. I was pushing for him all show. I'd like to see a little bit more, I guess, offense creativity from the back end. I think they're going to need it, the Leafs. They've played well in games 1 and 2. I love it. Matthews and Tavares finally get on the board, but I still feel like there's something missing from the game overall. Just I want to see more offensive chances. I know they're getting more zone time than Columbus, but watch the way Columbus is back in. Watch Werenski, Jones. They jump in every chance they get. They really help the front end with Columbus kind of generate more chances. And I think the Leafs are just kind of missing that extra little bit, or just generate a little bit more. And I think Sandin will bring it.
You hold a high bar, Ziggy, because I really thought the Leafs were dominant yesterday. I thought they were very, very good. I think they controlled the game almost start to finish. And they weren't rewarded really for as well as they played until finally they found the board with Matthews and then Tavares. I liked what Toronto brought yesterday, and you know, I think that was textbook Toronto. Control the puck, control the tempo, control the zone time, outchance your team, don't surrender possession until you have to. I'm sure they were checking off every single box. They were playing with purpose, I thought, from the first shift on. They enforced themselves physically at times as well. I mean, the Kyle Clifford hit right in that third minute of play. The guys were in our studio were saying, this is exactly what Toronto needs to do. You heard Anthony Stewart and Kevin Bieksa saying, this is the they really imposed themselves physically at times. I really liked what Toronto brought. You know, Sandin could help that, matriculating the puck up the ice and moving everything forward and the stretch passes. And I think he does deliver a lot of that. And that's maybe what you're referring to, just having answers on the back end and maybe provide a little offense as well. So I do think he's a good solution. But I was really impressed with the way Toronto played. And if Jake Muzzin hadn't got injured at the end, you know, I think the whole narrative today would be how great Toronto played. And we wouldn't be focused at all on any negatives, but not knowing the Muzzin situation, at least at this point moving forward, is that one kind of dark cloud sitting over the team at this point.
With David Amber, and David, I'm with you 100%. That was a fantastic effort start to finish last night. And yet you know me, and if Elliot Friedman happens to be up and listening, he's probably thanking goodness that it's not Friday, because it means he's not on and has to put up with my... I guess my psychological scarring from some 35 years of cheering for this team. But I'm going to throw three scenarios at you that occurred pre-COVID, and you can either tell me why it's going to be different or you can agree with me and have some hesitation. They lost 6-2 at home to Chicago. In their next game, they won 5-2 at Nashville. They played a home-and-home with Pittsburgh in February. On the 18th of that month, they got dismantled on the road. Two nights later, they played arguably, pre-COVID, their best game of the season in beating the Penguins. Two nights after that, on the 22nd of February, they got embarrassed by Carolina. That was the David Ayers Zamboni driver game. And then three nights after that, in their next game, they went down to Tampa Bay and beat the Lightning 4-3. So this team has shown consistently the ability to bounce back after tough games. They bounced back in game two after a not so bad game one, except for the fact that they didn't score. As a Leafs fan who's watched this team all year long, understanding there was a 4+ month break, why should I believe that they will take what they did in game two and transfer it over and continue it on in game three? Because I've been burned by the inconsistency before.
Scott, are you lying on a couch right now? Because you need someone outside my pay grade needs to help you through the things that are keeping you.
Elliot Friedman is thanking God that he is not on right now.
I mean, you're citing three very valid examples from, you know, what was supposed to be an 82-game schedule. And, you know, Ziggy will tell you this, how the guys perform in January and February in the dog days of the National Hockey League season is far different than playoff time when everyone's supposed to be on point. I mean, they're now put into this bubble. They're away from their families. They have nothing to focus on right now except hockey. They understand. They're sitting there at the breakfast buffet right now watching the New York Rangers packing their bags and leaving. I mean, this is very real, right? What happened in February against Carolina or Pittsburgh or whatever is so immaterial. And it's not to say you don't have a reason to. It's not like we're sitting there saying, okay, well, who are the Leafs going to play next? They're even the series. They look good. I get it, but you know, I don't think there's going to be some sort of letdown going into game three. Columbus might come out and set the tempo and be the better team in game three. And that might happen because Columbus is a very good team. They have stifling defense. They have a very effective forecheck. They're a good counterpunch team. And clearly they have a goalie they're comfortable with in Korpisalo. But the notion that the Leafs are just going to come in and say, well, all right, we've done our business. We're going to win this series and lay an egg in game three. I don't think anything's showing us that should be the case. They very well could have won game one. Freddie Anderson had that one unfortunate goal get in from Cam Atkinson. And they dominated by pretty much any metric game two. So I think they should feel pretty comfortable. I think, you know, we've witnessed a lot in the last 50 years with this Leafs team. I understand that. But, you know, this group specifically doesn't have to exercise the demons of playoff pass from the Maple Leafs. So you can rest assured, I think, that The Leafs are going to come out and play a good game, and whether Columbus will make the necessary adjustments and beat them is yet to be seen, but I don't think we're going to see something like we saw in January where there was just a complete lack of consistency from this group.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't see the letdown happening. It did cross my mind, though, when they scored that goal. I was thinking, and it's not just the Leafs, and I understand there's been questions around their inconsistency this year, but usually when you play that well for that long and you finally get that goal, it's like you don't relax, but you kind of take a deep breath and it's like, oh, we got one. And then you lay off a little bit, right? I was kind of looking for that, and they showed me last night that's not the case. And I'm with you. I don't see them laying off in game three. I think we're going to see the same amount. I think it's going to be even better. I think their game's going to get even better when Nylander and Marner actually start to get on the board, and they're a bit of the, you know, they're going to be the part of the conversation going forward, saying, okay, we need these guys, we need Marner to get going. I still think he's not quite there, and earlier in the show I was saying how confidence is such a big thing, David, and but he might not have that opportunity to get those, you know, couple phantom assists or to get the tap in back door. It's going to be one of those tight checking series, start to finish, and him and Nylander are probably going to have to just dig a little bit deeper. I mean, I don't know how you saw either of their games in the, you know, games one and two, but I don't think they're going to have the opportunity to kind of, I guess, feel good about themselves in a sense where every inch they're going to get, they're going to have to work for.
Yeah, you know, if you're Sheldon Keefe, the beauty of that is, yes, Marner and Nylander, you know, haven't maybe lived up to the billing thus far in the series. Although I thought Marner was much improved in game two. He was invisible in game one. He was creating offense in game two. He was actually expanding his game, not to just be a facilitator, but he did take more shots and shot attempts than you'd usually see Mitch Marner play. So he's sort of saying, okay, if this is what you're giving me, I'm going to take it, which I thought was a real sign of maturity and a move in the right direction. And above and beyond that, Sheldon Keefe, I like the move he made, you know, reuniting Matthews and Marner, putting Nylander back with Tavares. I think it worked by all accounts. And, you know, that's the beauty of what's at the Leafs' disposal, right? This wealth of talent up front. I mean, if you're John Tortorella, poor John Tortorella is looking around. The Leafs have four players that finished in the top 45 in scoring during the regular season in the Big Four. And if John Tortorella is looking up and down his bench, you know, he had one player finish in the top 70 in scoring in the league. You know, people keep saying, oh, we saw what Columbus did last year against Tampa. Well, there's no Panarin, no Duchesne, no Dzingel, no Bobrovsky, and goaltending hasn't been an issue. But they're missing a lot of those game breakers. You know, I think what's incumbent on the Leafs is to come out with a vengeance tomorrow, take the lead, and force Columbus to play an uncomfortable game. They don't like playing catch-up. They don't have the firepower to play catch-up, really. They play great when it's a tie game. They play exceptional when they have the lead, and they must be the most frustrating team to play against. But, you know, if the Leafs can sit there and come out of the gate strong, take the lead, then things bode really well for them. So, yeah, if Nylander and Marner can be part of this, and I think both of those players look better in game two than in game one, then that's a huge, huge benefit. Matthews looks like an absolute beast, and Tavares had, you know, the best game he's had in a long time that I can remember. Boy, he was a force creating so much offense, and he was rewarded finally late in the game with that second goal.
David Amber with us. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Elsewhere, David, let's start with the Carolina's pretty quick and effective dissection of the New York Rangers. Twofold. Number one, because the Rangers are one of those younger teams that are on the come up, but they're not quite there yet. And obviously they signed their star in Panarin in free agency last summer. Were you surprised at how quickly Carolina pushed New York out of this thing? And number two, I know he didn't start or play yesterday, but is Henrik Lundqvist's time with the Rangers up, even though he's got a year left on his deal?
Well, I'll start with the first question, and I was surprised that Carolina swept this series. And quite frankly, I thought the Rangers would win the series simply because they were dominant against Carolina during the regular season. I know after a four-month layoff, I guess I shouldn't have put too much credence in that, but it seemed like the matchup favored New York. And if you remember that there was this vote about the return to play and how they were going to go about it, and only two teams dissented. One of those two teams was Carolina, and
a big part of that was, well, we don't like the fact that we're a six seed and we've got to go up against a team we struggled with all year. I was surprised. I guess you don't sleep on Rod Brind'Amour and you don't sleep on that group of talented players. And they did it without Dougie Hamilton. So, I mean, that really, you know, speaks volumes to how good and how deep that Carolina team is. Aho, Svechnikov, if you haven't had a chance to see them, no players have been better than those two so far in the postseason. Svechnikov, the hat-trick in game two. Aho was the best player on the ice yesterday. So, you know, they're going to be a hard out for whomever they end up meeting up with. As far as Lundqvist goes, no, I don't think there's going to be a buyout or anything like that. I think Henrik Lundqvist is one of those guys. He's built up enough equity. He's done enough for that franchise. He took them to a Stanley Cup final. He's won a Vezina. He's you know, going to the Hall of Fame. He's one of those guys that, you know, he's going to play out his contract with the Rangers. And barring him asking for a trade, which is one of the discussion points we had at this year's trade deadline, would Henrik Lundqvist like to go to another team potentially to try and win that elusive cup? Barring that happening, Henrik Lundqvist is going to retire a Ranger, be an all-time Ranger great, and he'll have one more year, and I imagine he'll play through that year, and he'll keep mentoring Shesterkin and Georgiev. And in my opinion, it'll be a walk off into the sunset and probably right onto the front page of GQ magazine. I mean, this guy he's got everything going for him. He's one of those guys you love, but you love to hate, right? It's too much, right? It's like Clooney or something. He's just too much of a good thing. So, you know, great all around guy. And I expect fully for him to finish his career in New York as a Ranger. And then whatever he wants to do, he'll do, whether it's be a broadcaster or again, you know, he wants to be some big European model. I'm sure those opportunities will be there too.
I mean, great competitor, one of the toughest guys to go against. Kind of works for everything he gets, and it's tough. I was telling Scotty yesterday, we brought it up, and it's hard watching guys at the end of their career. You either win the cup and you go off in the sunset, or you have a younger guy come in and take your job. So it's tough, right? It's like a guy wins a cup, you're like, oh, maybe he could play a couple more years. He's still playing well. Or a young guy comes and takes it. Very often does a guy just, you know, get to decide. You know, there's some players that they want to, you know, squeeze out every single year they can. I feel like, you know, the King, he wants to, you know, Lundqvist wants to win a cup. It just... obviously, every player wants to win one, but he seems like he's one of those guys where, he's kind of hanging on for it. I did want to touch on the West, though. Mm-hmm. I want to know who everyone, obviously, the talks around McDavid and what he did in Game Two, and can him and Draisaitl take Edmonton to that next level and knock off Chicago and go on a little run here. Who's looked good? Who's looked good out West so far in your eyes?
Well, I mean, you brought up McDavid. Where do you even put that second goal he scored in his hat trick yesterday? I mean, an all-time great goals. It's in that conversation, my God, right? Yeah. We all remember the Lemieux against Minnesota, I think it was in 91, where he shreds through the whole team and literally dekes out the whole team. It was one of those, like, pee-wee kind of one of those goals, but it happens to be man against man. That goal by McDavid, just the hand eye, the skill, the speed, the finish, it was unbelievable. Yeah, I mean, Edmonton's an interesting team. You know, when you're not talking about the top four seeding teams and the teams that we're seeing right now in the qualifying round, Edmonton is one of those very intriguing teams. I'm worried, you know, for Winnipeg with all these injuries. It's just, there's just too many injuries right now for them to be a viable team to make a deep run, and now they're, you know, having to win back-to-back games to keep their season alive. Nashville, Arizona, it's just, neither team is getting me too excited right now. I think it's been really interesting that UC Saros has got to start the first two games instead of Pekka Rene, and that's turned into a best of three. It's definitely the wild, wild west, and things are open. It was a great win for the Canucks last night, a huge win. Mm-hmm. They reunited that Besser, Pettersson, Miller line, and boy, they look good. They Travis Green pulled a Sheldon Keefe and shuffled the deck, and it worked out well. The only problem for them is there's some mounting injuries here. Furland left the game yesterday. We're not sure what the status is there. Antoine Roussel, you guys probably didn't stay up this late, but Antoine Roussel took a slap shot, right off the helmet, and he looked very wobbly leaving the ice. So his status is unclear moving forward. And the big one is Tyler Toffoli. Unbeknownst to us, like pregame, he's like, oh, where's Tyler Toffoli? Apparently he's not playing. And that was a real surprise. We don't know the nature of his injury. Remember, they picked him up at the trade deadline. He was so good for Vancouver in the 10 games he played before the pause. And he was supposed to be that guy with Stanley Cup pedigree and that, 25 goals score to really help augment their offense. And we don't know what his status is moving forward. So I am concerned for Vancouver in that notion. So Edmonton seems the most healthy, and they've got the two best game breakers in Draisaitl and McDavid. So, is that enough to carry the team? We'll wait and see, but certainly that's going to be a very tough out for anyone.
David, before we get you out of here, just quickly, between you and Ron hosting everything and different guys coming in and out of the panel and all the games going on, give us maybe a 60-second or two-minute insight into kind of the zaniness behind the scenes of the broadcast.
Well, listen, Scott, we're adjusting. It's a different world post-COVID, and the logistics are very different. To the viewer, I'm not sure how different it looks, but it's different behind the scenes. But bottom line is we were all so excited to walk back in the building, be in the studio, and watch playoff hockey. We all longed for it and missed it, and it's been great. And one thing I'll say is we've had a lot of big voices, strong voices, and you have Brian Burke and Anthony Stewart and Cassie Campbell-Pascal and Bieksa and Rudy and Elliot. I mean, Chris Johnston. It's been good. A variety of thoughts, a variety of voices, and it's been really fun to be back in there. I was so excited on Saturday. It was, since COVID hit, guys, Saturday might have been one of my favorite days by a long shot, just to be able to go in there and do what we do. I'm sure you guys are feeling that same level of excitement, being able to actually cover sports again. So it's been great. It's been different, but it's been great, Scott.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun to watch, and we appreciate the work you guys are putting in. And let's be honest, David. I mean, we cheer for the Maple Leafs in this town, but not that I necessarily anticipate this, but I don't think it hurts when Canadian-based teams advance in something like this. We know we're getting somebody moving on from Calgary, Winnipeg. But if Edmonton can pull through, if Vancouver can pull through, certainly the Maple Leafs are looking very good in this series, tied 1-1. They've outplayed the Jackets, generally speaking. The more Canadian teams that can get through, the more we can love, and the more, in some cases, we can dislike, as in the case of the Habs. But it's always intriguing. Thanks for this, and we love having you on weekly. We know we'll work around your schedule just with the busyness of some late nights. So we'll talk again very, very soon.
Have fun and say hi to my buddy Adnan when you have him on soon. He's a great guest. Awesome.
Absolutely. Fun. Oh, absolutely. We're looking forward to it. David Amber, one of the hosts alongside Ron McLean of the Hockey Night in Canada broadcast and the NHL on Sportsnet. Where will we go with Adnan Virk? Well, there's plenty of baseball news. Will the NFL season, A, start on time? And does Adnan think we can sneak this thing through with all of the travel? I mean, bigger names like, for example, Odell Beckham Jr. saying, I'm not so sure we should be doing this. We'll jump into some of that. The Raptors are red hot. They play Orlando tonight. And some of Adnan's thoughts on the hockey as well. He is with us coming up next. All right, Ziggy, you've talked me into being an optimist with this Leafs team. I've come around, brother.
I talked to you. It only took me 3 hours.
Two and a half.
Yeah, it's. I'm excited. It's. There are things I've seen in the first two games of the series that I haven't seen out of them. I mean, we've seen them play like this, but not getting frustrated, staying patient. They got even better after game one, getting shut out. That can really sit with you and sting you, but it didn't. They generated more chances in game number two. And I really think the momentum has shifted. Like, I really think the Columbus Blue Jackets now, I think the Leafs are in their heads. to the point where they're going to try to open it up. You saw the way they changed their game when Toronto got on the board, right? How did Tavares get that chance?
They're
pressing, right? When Columbus presses, they're not the Columbus Blue Jackets that we're used to seeing.
Yeah, and it's the old saying, right? The simplified old saying, score that first goal. Yeah. And the Leafs, I mean, the ice was tilted for a very long time while it was still 0-0. And you just sat there and you thought, geez, just get rewarded for this. Just get rewarded for this, please. Because if it went the other way and a weird goal went in, whether it was a weak one by Freddie or a deflection off a rear end or a skate, Ziggy, I mean, that could have changed the entire complexion. But it was good to see the Maple Leafs get rewarded for their patience and rewarded for their play. A little more on that in a bit. We're pleased to welcome now a good Canadian boy who's made it down in the United States, MLB Network, NHL Network, the host of the Cinephile podcast and the GM Shuffle podcast. An old friend, Adnan Virk, is on the program. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great, Scott. Mike, a pleasure to return to my hometown's airwaves. I know I don't know if we're saving the best for last, but I am trying to give you guys a little boost here at the end of the show. And congrats on a huge Maple Leafs win. I can feel the reverberations here in North Jersey. Plan the parade.
There you go. Well, I mean, give us you can take the boy out of Toronto, but you can never take Toronto out of the boy, right? The plan the parade line. it'll always make an appearance in a conversation. Listen, Adam, before we get into some of the details of the Leafs and what kind of NFL season we may get, Major League Baseball and some of the challenges it's facing, what's it been like for you and your family over the last 4 or 5 months since COVID-19 really broke? You've been living with it not too far from New York City.
Yeah, exactly right, Scott. We live literally near the epicenter, which was of COVID-19, especially in mid-April. And we live about 35 minutes, 15 miles from Manhattan. Oh, I can go back to Columbus. Sorry. All right, maybe about 28 kilometers from New York. And listen, it was a scary time, though. There's no question about it. I think, like all of us, you kept thinking, all right, this will be a week or two. This too shall pass. Head down. Let's get through it. But it was just surreal, to say the least, because everything was shut down. And obviously, it was a very scary time. But thankfully, in our area, North Jersey, Bergen County, we were pretty safe, even though we realized so many people here work in New York City and commute to Manhattan, although I do not. MLB Network and NHL Network studios are in Secaucus, New Jersey. So I actually don't travel to the city as much as others, but we got through it, man. The big thing was social distance learning. I mean, I got four boys, and let me tell you something. My 12-year-old is pretty self-sufficient, but the 9-year-old needs a lot of support. So the having to figure out the difference between area and perimeter and, I mean, fractions and Ben Franklin. Hang on, I'm Canadian. What do I need to learn about U.S. history for? It was a challenge, to say the least. There was no learning about Louis Riel. I'll do that stuff.
Do we have Zig?
Oh, you cut out there. Sorry about that. Am I back?
You're back. Yep. Fire away,
you
hear pal.
Me? All right. Yeah, I missed the end of that, but yeah, I can't imagine with kids right now. It's got to be tough with COVID and trying to figure all that out. I got five nephews and a niece, and tough times. What do you? I wanted some of your initial thoughts on the return to play in all the sports. You've got the NHL, NBA going to the bubble system. You have baseball not going that way, keeping all the teams in their home cities, obviously, except the Toronto Blue Jays. What are your initial thoughts on sports returning?
Well, Mike, I burned through everything on Netflix and every other streaming platform available. So my initial comment is, thank God, you know, having more nights with my wife to pretend to watch Ozark or, you know, listen, Succession is great on HBO, but we want live sports back here. So my first reaction is hallelujah, thank God. And I think it's been fabulous. I mean, listen, yet 2 days ago, I said, oh my God, the Raptors are on at 1:30. I can watch a little bit of that. There was some afternoon baseball. There was hockey, literally five games a day. I mean, it's been tremendous. It feels a lot. I don't know for you guys. It feels like it's April to me. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, this is NHL playoffs, NBA playoffs, baseball's still getting going, right? So it feels like April, even though it's August. So, listen, I found it to be a huge joy because, like most people, you like to sample a little bit of everything, right? You, maybe when you're a sports fan, you like to watch a little bit of everything, whatever the big game is of that night. you're right in terms of the return to play. The bubble seems to be a roaring success. You look at the numbers. Guy was incredible in hockey. You know, 0 for over 7,000 in terms of no positive tests. The NBA has been very successful, aside from Lou Williams, you know, taking a trip to go get some wings from Magic City. And with baseball, I will say this. Although it has been a couple of high-profile cases and definitely alarming in the case of the Marlins and the Cardinals, overall, only 0.4% of tests have been positive, and the wide majority of those players who did test positive were asymptomatic. That's not to say it's not concerning. That's not to say that you don't want this if you're baseball. You wish it was cleaner. But the players themselves did not vote to be in a bubble. They wanted to be able to go home to their families. And I will say this, guys. It's like, you know, you go on a field trip. Somebody screws up early on, you go, hey, guys, let's be a little more vigilant here. Let's pay attention. I think all the guys are going to follow protocols a little more closely, and hopefully we'll get some more good baseball. And good news for the Marlins, by the way, 9-day layoff, and they won last night. You know, they're not going to be able to play 60 games. They just had 7 games wiped out. They're going to try to make up doubleheaders, 7 innings, et cetera. But if they don't, they're going to go by winning percentage. And how is that a team you don't root for? After what they've gone through, 17 players out because of COVID-19, and they win yesterday against the Orioles, go Fish.
Well, how about Don Mattingly just pretty much copying Adnan to the fact he's like, yeah, I'm playing some guys I don't really know who they are. that's the best. Shave those sideburns, Mattingly.
Yeah, I was about to say, I can think of the Simpsons episode. It was so funny. I mean, they have 2 players in the team, pitchers named John Smith. Like, what? Which one do we want here? Just get Smitty in the game. Let's go. I mean, they've got a guy, I swear to God, he's an Olympic short track speed medalist who's never even played baseball. I swear, that's how crazy this is in terms of the guys they put in. Francisco Cervelli is a name we know. Of course, the former Pirate, former Yankee. He went deep yesterday. They signed Pat Venditti. He's the switch pitcher of notoriety from years ago. He's there. I mean, Michael Hill, their president, did an amazing job. He literally signed 10 different players in 10 days. They called up guys from the minors. Lewis Brinson is one of their top prospects who struggled in the past. He's down with the team. But you're right. It's like just like in football, 4-3, get out there, do something, make a play. That's how Mattingly had to manage yesterday, and good for them for getting the win.
Yeah, the old Pat Venditti, when he was in Toronto, John Gibbons would come out, make a pitching change, and he'd call for Venditti by throwing up both hands. That was the old classic Gibby with Adnan Virk.
That's funny.
So what is your sense, Adnan, of where we're headed here with the NFL season? Because this is... Like, we were joking, Ziggy and I, back in March. Everything always seems to kind of sort of come up NFL. So the COVID-19 pandemic hits, and from a sports perspective, hockey and basketball get shut down about a month before their playoffs are scheduled to begin. Baseball gets shut down in the middle of spring training, less than a month before its regular season is supposed to begin. The NFL can go ahead with its free agency period and its draft because it can do some things remotely, and it's got 6 months to not just sit back, but also to figure out how it wants to go about dealing with this thing. And we're now closing in on the start of the NFL season. Are you confident that with travel planned and now some players starting to speak up, guys of notoriety, OBJ being one of them, people questioning whether we should be doing this, are you confident the season is going to start on time and that it's going to play through relatively unscathed?
First part, yes, Scott. I am confident they're going to start on time. I am not confident they're going to finish through. And your point there is excellent in terms of the lead-up to this. You know, baseball on the fly had to figure this out. You know, the pandemic gets mid-March, and you're supposed to start meaningful baseball in a couple of weeks. That's the worst possible time. They had to work on a new deal, the CBA, et cetera. Hey, let's get this thing done. For hockey and basketball, thankfully, most of the regular seasons were over. Press pause. Let's get right to the playoffs. In the case of the NBA, some regular season games, but away we go. For football, you're right. You had all this time. You're literally in the best fantasy possible. You can see what the other major sports are doing and figure out a plan. And as of July 25th, they had no plan. Like, it was incredible to me. Players are up there tweeting and saying, listen, there's been nothing that we've been told. Basically, just show up to camp. We're going to test you every day. And if the test rate is above 5%, we'll keep testing every day. And if it's below that in terms of the rate of transmission, then we'll test you every other day. Like, what? That's it? Like, what are the protocols? I mean, it was crazy to me that the football, although it isn't crazy to me as I say that, because football has that arrogance about it. It's the number one sport in the country. Everyone loves, eats, and breathes, and sleeps football. It's like, yeah, we're just going to play no matter what. I said tongue-in-cheek to a friend of mine, you know, when the Cardinals test positive, it's great. 3 games are wiped out here in baseball, right? the Marlins test positive. Hey, they're not playing for a week. The NFL is so arrogant. They might say, all right, six Packers tested positive, four Bears tested positive, game time at 1 on Eastern on Fox. Enjoy the game. Like, seriously, I don't think they have the type of attention to detail, care, compassion about how serious this is. Because, as you point out, there's no measures being taken. Nothing. Like, at least in hockey and basketball, you have a bubble. In baseball, which is a criticism for the non-bubble, at least travel was reduced, right? And now they're going to do doubleheaders in seven innings. Like, they are making concessions and allowances to their sport, realizing COVID-19 is this untamable virus right now. Football's like, yep, no changes. Travel across the country, everything we normally do, like nothing to see here. So I would be shocked if we can get through the entire regular season with zero interruption. They're going to try. I think September 10th, we're going to have NFL football. But to think that there's not going to be wide swaths of people affected by this, and by the way, I think what will happen, Scott, is they'll just say, all right, well, 10 guys tested positive in the Chargers. Let's just grab guys off the practice roster. Let's keep this thing moving. There's so much money at stake. I just think that football, in this case, will turn a blind eye, rightly or wrongly.
Adnan, just let me pick up on that. I had this idea, and I mean, I hadn't heard it anywhere else, which doesn't mean it's not out there. I thought to myself, why not? The way that baseball is trying its very best to keep the West, the Central, and the East contained by keeping those teams together, why not package together the NFC and AFC West Division teams, North and South Division teams, and East Division teams, pick one city out of those eight, preferably a turf field so that the grass doesn't get chewed up so that you can hold multiple games per day. And with the time zone changes, you can stagger start times and feed your national TV broadcasts appropriately. Why not try to quarantine each division within a particular city and see if it wouldn't work that way?
Yeah, I like this, Scott. I mean, that makes sense to me because everything is about TV, as you mentioned. And so if you stagger the times, I mean, people want to be able to say, listen, I love NFL Sunday at 1 o'clock and watch 11 games at the same time. Okay, well, maybe it wouldn't be 11, depending on where all the teams are going to be. But if you can do four at a time, so to speak, that still will give you that fix of football throughout the day. And listen, the most important thing, I think, is limiting travel, right? If there's one thing we've learned by watching what all these experts are saying is that you don't want people moving around as much as possible. So you try to limit it. Like, look at baseball. You know, the Yankees, Phillies, literally, it's an hour and a half drive, right? Like, you literally have a home-and-home, four games, boom, and onwards you go. With football, cross-country travel like that, I mean, it feels like a recipe for disaster. Peter King, who is smarter than all of us, who has covered football for decades, it says right now he's giving it a 40% chance that football can get through the season unscathed. Like, that's remarkable that he is a guy who's covered the sport that well and saying less than 50%. Those who are optimistic, I will say, because I do a podcast, the GM Shuffle, with my friend Michael Lombardi, former Super Bowl champion, you know, worked with the Patriots, the Raiders. The reason he's confident is he says football by its very nature is a bubble, meaning you practice at home in a very contained environment. You go to training camp, you knock it out, you go home. Like, everything is accounted for in terms of your schedule. So guys can't really get into trouble, right? You can't really just go to the bar, go have a couple of drinks, et cetera. You fly out to the city you're supposed to fly out to Friday, sometimes Saturday. You play the game, you go right back home, or you stay on the road, whatever it is. So Mike is more confident than I am because he says, having been in football, it's such a regimented sport in terms of your free time, in terms of protocol. Like, every I is dotted, every T is crossed. So he has a little more optimism than I do. But I do think your plan, there's something to that in terms of, hey, central location. Create a bubble, even if it isn't a bubble. You know what I mean?
We're up against the clock. I just want your thoughts quickly on, we're going to just move to hockey. I know you're following the Flyers from, you know, you're based in Jersey now. How do you think these teams that are just going to be playing in seeding going to go into the round of 16, or I guess the official playoffs, when you've got all the play-in teams going right to battle in these short best-of-five series are going to kind of be battle-tested and back in? Do you think that's going to be an issue for your Flyers and other teams that are just playing in the seeding?
I do. It's a great question, Ziggy. I was watching that Flyers-Bruins game on Sunday, and I noticed it was a little less juice in the game, a little less tempo. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, is it just because of no fans? Like, what's this about? But I think it's, A, guys are getting their legs back. But listen, they've been in shape the whole time. They had a mini training camp, so to speak. I do think there's something to be said for When you hear round robin, you go, oh, okay, yeah, okay. Cheating is nice, but come on. This is not, right? This isn't tooth and nail the way that the Leafs are playing, or the Islanders are playing, the Panthers are playing, the Habs, Penguins is a great series. The Rangers got dusted off right away. Like, there's a real urgency you can feel when those games are going on versus the round robins. I mean, literally round robin. I mean, it's about as benign and genial as it gets. So I do think it's going to be interesting for those teams. Let's suppose Philly ends up beating Tampa and, you know, they end up having a good seed in the rounding. It is going to be a bit of a challenge to say, okay, guys, let's literally jump the notch here. But Alain Vigneault is a great coach, and they look really good, man. I think the Flyers are going to go deep. Carter Hart, a young goalie. I know he's obviously young and hasn't been battle-tested, but he's got confidence. And they've got an underrated defense, Ziggy. I really think that they don't get enough love. Provorov, I think everyone knows how great he is, but I think Braun is really good. Niskanen's good. I think that they've got Haig is excellent. And obviously all four lines, obviously we know the big names like Giroux and Couturier, I think, should finally win a Selke Award. God, every year it's Patrice Bergeron. But I do think that up and down the line at Philadelphia looks really good. But, yes, in answer to your question, it is going to be interesting. That first game, I think, will be interesting for the round-robin teams. Maybe it'll take a couple periods to really get their legs and pick up the intensity.
Adnan, great to speak to you, and we're going to do this each and every week here on Leadoff. We'll certainly look forward to it, and there will be a bunch to get to. We'll talk again next week, my friend.
I love going around the horn. Scott, Ziggy, I appreciate it, boys. Anytime, look forward to it next week.
You bet. Adnan Virk of MLB Network, NHL Network, and the host of two podcasts, the Cinephile Pod, if you're a movie buff, and along with Michael Lombardi, the GM Shuffle Pod, covering the NFL. We'll get Hugh into studio and get you set for a good show on a Leafs off day coming up. Raptors in action tonight. They got the Orlando Magic on the road in Orlando. 8 o'clock tip on Sportsnet 1. The Blue Jays play in Atlanta. Game 2 of their 3-game set with the Braves. First pitch a little after 7 o'clock here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360. And all the NHL action continues on the main Sportsnet channel. No Leafs tonight. They've got the Jackets in Game 3 of their series tomorrow.
Can't wait. My goodness.
Pivotal game tonight, Hugh and Ziggy. Everything okay over there, Zig?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay, because you
show's not over yet, Zig.
Were you twisting in your chair?
Yeah, I'm twisting on my couch. I'm actually on a couch. I told you, the office isn't ready yet.
I'm still unpacking
from, when did I move again? March?
Know. Are you on a crisp and crunchy leather couch?
I do not have a leather. This is called.
Oh.
This is actually called micro suede that I'm on right now.
Oh my god, micro suede.
Yeah, micro suede.
Is that like polyester or pleather? Is that pleather? Isn't it?
It's pleather. No, it's not pleather. It's suede, but it's micro.
If it gets wet, does it shrink? Or it's already micro suede.
That's the micro suede. If it's micro suede, it doesn't shrink in water. Yeah.
The Habs have game 3. They'll be wearing the red and the blue tonight, the home team against Pittsburgh. We got a prediction for that one?
Yeah, I mean, Carey Price is going to have to be, he's been fantastic so far. He's going to have to be even better. And they got to get some scoring. I don't have a whole lot of faith. I think that series might be over. Zig?
Listen, I mean, we didn't expect much from Montreal. Three rookie centers. I mean, that's a tall order to beat any team in the league. Never mind the Pittsburgh Penguins and the amount of cups they have in that room. It's going to be tough. I love what I've seen out of Carey Price. He's back. I think it's great for them.
Yeah, can't do it by himself though.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. You're still going to need goals, but. You never know. We didn't expect them to win game 1. They did that. And like I said, short series, anything's possible.
We got the tee up tomorrow morning of the Leafs and Jackets game 3. And we will recap the Penguins and the Habs game 3, which goes today. We're back at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. Good show coming up. Have a great hump day. You can take the boy out of Toronto, but you can never take Toronto out of the boy, right?